Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Dorothy Gundy, Bruce Albert, Jill Robbins, and Anne Ball. Later, Steve Ember will bring us a special Making of a Nation report. But first, here is Dorothy Gundy.
Donald Trump supporters expect him to carry out his campaign promises. I expect him to move quickly with his rock the boat agenda, said Republican Senator David Vitter of Louisiana. By rock the boat, Vitter means making changes sure to upset people who liked the way things were done in the past. A Los Angeles Times public opinion study taken before the election found only 43% of Trump supporters expected him to win. But now that he is president-elect, Trump supporters expect him to act on his campaign promises and to do so quickly.
Roy Beck heads Numbers USA. It is a group in Virginia that supports limits on immigration and efforts to reduce illegal immigration. Politicians often make promises that they do not act on, Beck said. But dealing with illegal immigration was so much a part of Trump's campaign and a large reason why many people voted for him. He has to act. However, Beck does not expect Trump to order the removal of all 11 million undocumented immigrants, as he once proposed during his campaign. The focus will be on how to get Americans into jobs, Beck said. Beck argues many jobs are going to immigrants, and that the numbers of both legal and illegal immigrants should be reduced.
Robert Jeffress is minister at the First Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas. He campaigned for Trump. Jeffress said Trump will appoint Supreme Court justices who will vote to overturn a 1973 ruling that gave women the right to an abortion. Jeffress believes Trump is more committed than previous Republican presidents, including Ronald Reagan, to limiting the number of abortions.
David Vitter is leaving the U.S. Senate just as Trump becomes president. Vitter said Trump has a good chance to win passage of proposals to cut back on government regulations and better enforce immigration laws. But Vitter also wants Trump to push an issue not popular with Republican or Democratic members of Congress. Vitter has long proposed limiting how long a member of Congress can serve, or term limits. Trump took up the Vitter proposal during his campaign for president. Trump said term limits are a good way to make sure politicians represent the people, not special interests. After the election, Trump described same-sex marriage as settled law. In effect, Trump was saying the 2015 Supreme Court ruling that states cannot stop same-sex couples from marrying is unlikely to change. But many people who supported Democrat Hillary Clinton for president are worried. A new Gallup poll said 75% of Clinton supporters said they were less confident in Trump's ability to serve as president than they were during the campaign. Since the presidential vote, Trump has taken steps to reassure opponents. I pledge to every citizen of our land that I will be president for all Americans, and this is so important to me," Trump said in his victory speech last week.
But some said naming Stephen Bannon to a top White House position was a bad sign. The Anti-Defamation League, an activist group, said Bannon ran a conservative news service that provided a platform for anti-Muslim extremists. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm Bruce Alpert.
Accidents in which people lose an arm or leg often take place in communities with large numbers of poor people. In such areas, victims may not have enough money to pay for costly prosthetic replacements. But two men from Belarus have used simple and easily available materials to make a prosthetic arm. Almost anyone can build one of the limbs at home. Oleg Galtsev was 4 years old when his father Sergei lost his arm in an explosion on a military firing range. At the time, Sergei Galtsev was an army captain in the former Soviet Union. Almost 30 years later, he is using a prosthetic arm designed by his son and another engineer. He says,
"They gave me the prosthesis to test for 3 weeks. I used it to saw firewood, cut the grass, and to do many other things in the field."
The mechanical arm looks nothing like the new prosthetics available in industrial countries, but it is easy to make, has a low cost, and does not need much maintenance. Oleg Galtsev says the device is designed for people who do not feel at ease with electronics. Galtsev says it took 2 years to design the prosthesis. They used a 3D printer to create some parts and bought others online. The creators did not ask for a legal patent to control ownership of the device. In fact, they have published directions on how to make it online. They say it costs just 1/10 of the price of other mechanical prostheses. Sergei Galtsev says he can now perform many outdoor activities, including using a chainsaw to cut tree limbs.
"I am proud that my son decided to tackle this problem. There are many people who really need this device in their daily lives."
Oleg Galtsev says many people have watched videos of his prosthetic arm invention on YouTube. He says he hopes his work will influence others to invent new prosthetic devices. I'm Jill Robbins.
Spider webs have something in common with guitar strings. The long, thin strings on a guitar can vibrate. They move back and forth or from side to side. So do webs made by spiders. The lines of silk they produce can carry vibrations. This movement gives the small creature information about what landed on the web. Spiders have 8 legs and usually 8 eyes. The animals build webs with their own soft, naturally made silk. And much like playing the strings of a guitar, a spider can send out vibrations across its web over many different frequencies. Scientists at the University of Oxford have shown how spiders control the tension of their webs. They do this to make use of the power of their senses. Spiders catch their food, usually insects, in their web. They make small movements which spread across their web. The vibrations can tell the spider what is there, maybe a possible mate or something tasty to eat. Beth Mortimer works in the zoology department at the university. She says the vibrations give the spider details about what is caught in the web. They can tell the spider where that next meal is and what it might be. But she says vibrations are not just used to identify what is for dinner.
But vibrations are also important in courtship. So a lot of males will actually generate very specific kind of a musical pattern, which the females can use to determine not only that they're a male, but that they're the right species and whether she might want to mate with them as well.
Mortimer adds that a spider makes its own vibrations to find out the condition of the web. How do the researchers know that? They used special equipment to send out laser pulses into the web of a garden cross spider. Then they used a laser to measure the very small vibrations which spread throughout the web. They sent their own vibration to learn more.
We were able to input our own vibration into the web, move this vibration around to different locations to work out how the spider is able to locate where vibration sources are coming from and how the vibrations change as they move through the web structure.
Using computer models, the scientist could show how a spider can change the size of a wave vibration. The spider does this by changing the tension or tightness of the silk lines. Mortimer says by controlling the tightness of the material, it lets the spider effectively tune their web's properties. The spiders then can control how information is getting to them where they hang out in the middle of the web. The research shows that spiders have a special ability to shape the physical properties of their self-made materials and creations. The scientists think that spider silk may have changed over time for this purpose. And Mortimer explains, in a way, spiders can move their silk threads much like a musician plays the strings of a guitar.
They are constantly able to monitor the tensioning on their webs by they can kind of feel around with their legs. So they have a behavior where they kind of bounce on their webs slightly and sometimes they pluck the silk fibers as well. So they're able to kind of send out a vibratory signal into the web, and they can monitor what comes back.
Engineers might be able to learn a thing or two from spiders. This information could help engineers better understand how structures react to energy and how vibrations affect a building. I'm Ann Ball.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. The Second World War ended with the surrender of Japan in August 1945. Americans looked to their new president, Harry Truman, to lead them into a new time of peace. Truman was vice president until President Franklin Roosevelt died suddenly in the closing months of the war. Almost no one expected President Truman to be as strong a leader as Roosevelt had been. And at first, they were right. Truman had one problem after another during his first months in the White House. Truman's first big problem was the economy. Almost 2 million Americans lost their jobs as factories ended wartime production. Americans everywhere worried about what would happen next. Only a few years before, the nation had suffered through the worst economic crisis in its history. No one wanted to return to the closed banks, hungry children, and other sad memories of the Great Depression. In some ways, the economy did better after the war than many experts had predicted. Many Americans still had money they had saved during the war, and Congress passed a law designed to help people keep their jobs. The situation could have been much worse than it was. However, the economy could also have been better, much better. Almost overnight, the price of almost everything began to rise. President Truman tried to stop the increases through a special price control agency that had been created during the war. However, thousands of business people refused to follow the government price control rules. Instead, they set their own prices for goods. Store owners would tell government officials that they were obeying the price controls, but often they charged whatever they wanted for the goods they sold. Businesses were not the only ones who were refusing to obey government price controls. Organized labor did the same thing. President Truman had always been a friend of labor unions, but during the first months of his administration, he became involved in a fierce struggle with coal miners and railroad workers. The first sign of trouble came in September 1945. A group of auto workers closed down factories at the Ford Motor Company. Then, workers at General Motors went on strike. Soon, there were strikes everywhere. The oil industry, the clothing industry, the electrical industry, and more. The strikes made Truman angry. He believed the striking workers were threatening the economy and security of the United States. He became even angrier when union representatives came to the White House and refused to accept a compromise wage offer. Truman ordered the army to take over the railroads and the coal mines. Within a short time, the striking coal miners returned to work. However, the president had less success with the railroad workers. He became so angry with the unions representing them that he asked Congress to give him the power to draft all striking railroad workers into the armed forces. The rail strike finally ended. but millions of Americans lost faith in Truman's ability to lead the country and to bring people together. By late 1946, most Americans believed that the man in the White House did not know what he was doing. Truman seemed weak and unable to control events. Union members disliked him because of his strong opposition to the coal and rail strikes. Farmers opposed Truman because of the administration's effort to keep meat prices low. Conservatives did not trust the reforms that Truman promised in his speeches, and liberal Democrats watched with concern as many of Franklin Roosevelt's old advisors left the government because they could not work with Truman. In November of 1946, the people voted in congressional and state elections. The results showed they were not satisfied with Truman and his Democratic Party. Republicans won control of both houses of Congress for the first time in 18 years, and Republicans were elected governor in 25 states. The election was a serious defeat for the Democrats, but a disaster for Truman. Some members of his party even called on him to resign. Few people gave Truman much chance of winning the next presidential election in 1948. However, Harry Truman began to change in the months that followed the 1946 congressional elections. He became a stronger speaker. He showed more understanding of the powers of the presidency. And in matters of foreign policy, he began to act more presidential. This was especially so in Truman's reaction to Soviet aggression in Germany. Truman wanted to rebuild Germany as well as the other war-torn countries of Western Europe. As we heard last week, his administration worked closely with Western European leaders to rescue their broken economies through the Marshall Plan. But the Soviets did not want to see Germany rebuild, at least not so quickly. At first, they flooded Germany with extra German currency in an effort to destroy its value. They walked out of economic conferences. And finally, in early 1948, they blocked all the roads to West Berlin. West Berlin was in communist East Germany, but not under communist control, as was East Berlin. After the war, the Allies had divided Germany in half. West Germany had a democratic government. East Germany was communist, under Soviet control. The Soviet actions in Berlin were a direct threat to the West. Truman had three difficult choices. If he did nothing, the world would think the United States was weak and unable to stop Soviet aggression. If he fought the blockade with force, he might start a third world war. But there was another choice. The Allies proposed the idea of flying tons of food, fuel, and other supplies into West Berlin. Not just once, but every day, as long as the Russians continued their blockade. It would be a difficult job. West Berlin was home to 2.5 million people. No one had ever tried to supply so large a city by air. Planes would have to take off every 3.5 minutes, day and night, to supply the people with enough food, medicine, clothing, and badly needed coal. The operation involved American C-47 and larger C-54 transport planes, along with British Lancaster, York, and Hastings aircraft. On June 26th, the first C-47s landed at Tempelhof Airport, the beginning of the great operation that was to come. Plans called for the operation to last just a few weeks. The planes landed in the blockaded city, and local volunteers provided support on the ground. Former mechanics of the Luftwaffe, the German Air Force, joined Americans in servicing the aircraft. More than 20,000 Berliners worked day and night to build an additional landing field for the American and British planes. It became Tegel, now Berlin's major airport. As part of the supply effort, the British Royal Air Force even landed Sunderland flying boats on a Berlin lake. Brigadier General Joseph Smith was appointed task force commander of the American part of the airlift. General Smith called the mission Operation Vittles, using an American slang term for food. Operation Vittles also led to Operation Little Vittles, or the dropping of chocolates and other treats to children. The pilots who did this became known as candy bombers. Appreciative German children called them die Schokoladenflieger, the chocolate pilots.
They wanted to know which airplane I was in. I said, you tell my airplane on regular wings, and then you'd know that's me. Watch just that airplane. And they says, good, that's Lindenborg. I came back the next day, and I put little parachutes for the Galgumi and the Chocoladen so they could see it. And so it would hit them hard in the head, slow it down. And so I wiggled the wings, and boy, they waved their hands, and I pushed it out of the airplane. And that's how it started.
It was the idea of Gail Halverson, a pilot in the United States Air Force. Lieutenant Halverson became known as Mr. Wiggly Wings. From his plane, he would drop chewing gum and chocolates attached to tiny parachutes made from handkerchiefs. Soon, many of the airlift pilots were dropping candy from their planes, including into Soviet-controlled areas that they flew over. Americans back home supplied the handkerchiefs, and the chocolate industry supplied the treats. Years later, in Berlin, Gail Halverson told German interviewer Rolf Gründer how he got the idea.
I dropped chocolate because of gratitude. I met 30 children at the fence at Tempelhof, and not one put out their hands and says, give me more than flour, give me more than coal, give me chocolate. And they had no chocolate, they had no gum, but they would not be a beggar. They're so grateful for flour. And I said, wow. They were thankful. And when people are thankful, good things happen.
It soon became clear to the Soviets that the Berlin airlift would succeed. In May of 1949, almost 1 year after they had started their blockade, they ended it. The crisis in Berlin changed the way many Americans saw their president. Harry Truman no longer seemed so weak or unsure of himself. Instead, he was acting as a leader who could take an active part in world affairs. Truman's popularity increased. However, most Americans did not expect him to win the election in 1948. Almost everyone believed that the Republican candidate, New York Governor Thomas Dewey, would capture the office. The election campaign that year turned out to be one of the most exciting and surprising in the history of the nation. That will be our story next week.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.